Welcome to my stories and my journeys around the old county of Gwent. Now, sometimes it isn't easy to know which path to follow. The rambler had been moving through the southeast of the land of Gwent, sun-brown feet on the earth and footprints filling with blossom. She had been riding along the lanes, sat sideways on her grey mare, reaching out her petalled fingers. And now blossom was everywhere you looked, and Rambler herself was hard to keep in your sights, hard to catch up with. But there was a trail I wanted to follow. I talked about it a bit last episode. It's an old trail. It's a pig trail, or rather, a sow trail. It's the trail of Hen Wen, the old white sow, the blessed sow who brought abundance to the land of Gwent. And the medieval Welsh triads tell us that Hen Wen rose up out of the sea, heavily pregnant, and she came to land at Abertarogi. Now, in those days, it was a substantial waterway. And in those days, the Aber, the mouth of the Trogi, was near Portskewet, Porthoscowan, which also was a much more substantial port. But nowadays, if you want to see where the diminished Trogi Brook meets the sea, you need to walk along the coast from Portskewet, under the concrete and steel of the second Severn Bridge. And there, at Caldicot Pill, the brook flows to meet the sea. It comes under the motorway and under the coast path and flows the last 100 or so metres across the rough grass between steep, oozy mud banks into the brown, choppy waters of the Severn Sea. But then if we follow the Trogi Brook inland, we'll be pretty much following the course that Hen Wen must have taken. The brook comes and goes, and you can kind of catch up with it quite well at Caldicot Castle, where it flows through the grounds. Now, the Trogi Brook changes its name as it flows. It's also called the Nevern or Neddon Brook. Both spellings occur. And by the time it flows through the grounds of Caldicot Castle, it's the Nevern Brook. And then it soon winds its way around to Caerwent. And at that point, its name changes again, even though it's the selfsame brook all the way, the one whose course Hen Wen followed. But in fact, at Caerwent, I felt that I needed to pause for a while. Beside the current modern-day little village of Caerwent, there is a Roman town. It's very big, and Hen Wen certainly trotted alongside the brook long before the Romans arrived. And although I understand the basics of what it is and what it represents, and although Cadw have put up very good interpretation boards, I felt that this would be a time when it would be good to talk to Frank Olding again to more fully understand what it was that I was seeing at the Roman ruins of Caerwent.
Well, we're sitting on the south wall, at the south gate, actually, of the Roman town here, overlooking the Nevern Brook, which is over to our right in the bottom of the valley. And this stretch of wall is one of the best preserved original Roman walls in Britain. A lot of other places have been restored, but this is actually more or less in its original condition. And yes, Caerwent is a big site. It's 44 acres, and it's really tied up with how the Romans set about pacifying, which is a bit of a euphemistic word, and civilizing the Silures, the tribe that lived here in southeast Wales, after a very, very long struggle. And so they decided to set up the Civitas, which is a native unit of government within the Roman Empire, and they chose Caerwent as the capital of the civitas of the Silures. And the Silures lived in what's now Gwent and Glamorgan, so southeast Wales. And it's possible that their original tribal centre was up at Llanmelin Hillfort. That's one theory, that the tribal rulers were moved down from Llanmelin to here.
Llanmelin is just a few fields away, really.
Yes, it's just to the north of us. Quite a big and impressive and quite mysterious hill fort, really. And so the road, the main Roman road across South Wales from Chepstow to Caerleon, onto Cardiff, Cowbridge, Carmarthen, runs right through the middle of the town. So they built the town to straddle what was obviously already a military road. And we think that the bulk of the establishment of the town took place towards the end of the first century, so about AD 80, AD 90. And the town we've got now with us, which is the end product of a long period of development, is a square with a grid pattern of streets and the main Roman road, the old A48, as it were, running straight through the middle of the town. Within the town, there's the Basilica Forum. That's the commercial and administrative centre of the town. That was excavated in the 1980s. A great big basilica hall, which had things like the magistrates' court, the tax offices, and also the council chamber. That's the council that ran Siluria for the Romans, essentially. And that's where they met. And then outside the basilica was the forum with shops around it. And also that's probably where the market would have been on a regular day. And the Roman name for Caerwent is Venta Silurum, which is where we get Gwent from, ultimately. And Venta means a market. So it's literally the marketplace of the Silures. Into the 2nd, 3rd century, they're building stone walls around the town, which are still here. And then the last thing they add are the towers. We can see towers along this wall, which are but the wall, are built against the wall, and then the towers are added later. The towers are designed to hold archers. And by the 3rd, 4th century, we're very close to the Severn Sea, and in that late Roman period, we're getting Irish raids up and down the coast of Wales, up in the northwest, out in West Wales in Pembrokeshire, but also up the Severn Sea and along this coast. And so they are aware that they need to strengthen the defences of the town. So it's a process that takes 200 or 300 years, really, from the initial settlement to what we see today.
So the temple here at Caerwent, it wasn't exactly like a classical Roman temple then?
No, it doesn't look anything like a classical Roman temple, which will be typically a rectangular building with pillars all around the outside and a big pine end, as they say in Abertillery, and that's not what this called, really. What the hell is it called?
What's it really called, Frank?
Pediment. And a pediment. A triangular pediment with sculptures in it. So no, there seems to be a round temple near the east gate, and then this typical Romano-Celtic temple right next to the basilica in the middle of the town. So no, it's not a classical temple in that sense. It seems to be a very enclosed space. These small Celtic temples are quite enclosed, really. We think that the bulk of people would have stood in the enclosure, in the garden, if you like, within this wall, and that would not have been really privy to what went on in the centre of the temple, but could have walked around this ambulatory or veranda around the outside. So it works on a very different way to the classical temple, which usually has the statue of the god or the goddess inside and a large altar outside, so that everything that goes on is in a very open public space. So it implies that it's a much more restricted, private kind of activities that are going on there.
More intimate
is a better word, probably. And that the other possibility is that there are two small buildings within the enclosure of the temple, and they could be a house or accommodation for the priest or the priestess, or one of them or both of them could be a place for pilgrims to sleep in, because we know that one of the things that people in the Celtic areas did was to go on pilgrimage to temples. to gain a message or to gain communion with the god or the goddess. And one of the ways they did that was by spending the night in the temple enclosure, as close, as it were, to the god or goddess as they could. And we know that that's going on at Lydney, for instance, in the temple to Nodens, which is not far from here, so that you would go in, stay the night, have a dream, which was a message from the god or the goddess, and then one of the priests or priestesses of the temple would interpret the dream to you. So that could also be part of what's going on in the little temple here in Caerwent. The one thing that's important about it is that it's right in the mid, it's right in the heart of the town. It's right next to the Basilica Forum. So it's obviously part of the administrative and the social heart of the town. So it's obviously a very important place because it's in a prime position right next to the Basilica and the Forum.
There were a couple more things I wanted to talk to Frank about before we moved on from Caerwent, because even before I first ever visited the site, I had seen the little goddess figurine that is now in the Newport Museum and Art Gallery, the seated mother goddess found at Caerwent. She's a beautiful little figure holding in one hand, well, the archaeologist Miranda Althaus Green thinks it's a yewberry held in one hand and a yew frond held in the other. We can't be absolutely certain. Perhaps it's a stalk of wheat and an apple. And her mouth is open, as if speaking or singing. And her ears are incised, as if listening. And there's also a stone head found at Caerwent, with one eye carved much more clearly than the other, as is often found in Bronze and Iron Age statues. One eye viewing this world, and one eye viewing the other world. So I asked Frank about these things.
Well, the goddess was found before the temple was excavated. She was dug up from a pit, which is within a metre or a metre and a half of the wall of the temple. And then the temple was excavated in the 1980s. So it's possible that the little goddess was associated with the temple, because she's very close to it. Those two little statues, which are obviously local deities, are quarried from the local stone. All the other inscriptions and all the other statuary in Roman Caerwent are made of imported stone. There's Bath stone, there's stone from the Cotswolds. These two little goddesses are made from local stone, which seems to be important that they actually spring from the landscape. And some archaeologists have interpreted that as a restatement of Silurian identity in the second century, that they are producing these two very important little sculptures of their goddess, whose name we don't really know. What would be really nice would be to have an inscription or something that would tell us which god or goddess was honoured in the temple. My money is on the little goddess who's in Newport, because she was discovered so close to the temple itself. And it's possible that she was taken out of the temple and buried in the pit, potentially for safety. As we know that there are other deities that were worshipped in Caerwent from inscriptions. So the other local Silurian deity is a warrior called Oculus. And then there's also a god called Lenus, who is also, we know, worshipped on the continent, in what's now southwestern Germany. And he's a god of healing. And Lenus means the god of the grove. Lenus in Latin's Latinized form of Lenos in Celtic gives us Llwyn in Welsh. We also know from very scrappy evidence that Epona was being worshipped here. There's a little piece of a statuette of Epona in the museum in Newport that was excavated from Caerwent. They would make little statues of her sitting side saddle on a horse. They were made in Gaul mostly. And then there's a little piece of one of these statuettes of Epona. So we know that there are other gods being and goddesses being worshipped here. All the ones we have evidence for so far are conflations of a Celtic god or goddess and a Roman god or goddess. And the native deities seem to be these little stone sculptures, one of the mother goddess, as I mentioned earlier. Some archaeologists think that the little goddess is Cuda. Cuda is the goddess who gave her name to the Cotswolds. But Cuda means, in Proto-Celtic, he or she who listens, the listening goddess. So that could be her name.
I tell you one thing I wanted to ask you about, because I know you've written a bit about it. I've been following the course of Hyn Wen from Abertawrogi up through Caldicot and following the course of the Troggy Brook, and we're going to continue on that way shortly. So we're on a sow journey, a pig journey, and I know that in archaeological terms the deposits of pig bones are significant.
In this neck of the woods in southeast Wales, we've got some amazing evidence for the place of pigs in ritual feasting. In the Vale of Glamorgan, for instance, where there's a huge midden at Llanmais with remains of cauldrons and remains of feasting, there are the bones of literally thousands of pigs, hundreds of thousands of individual pieces of bone, which represents thousands of pigs. One interesting thing, amongst all those thousands of pigs, none of them have got a right foreleg. So they've taken the right foreleg of the pig and put it somewhere else. They've eaten the pig, they've burnt the bones are placed in the midden, and so there are the bones of thousands of pigs, but not the right foreleg. And that must be a ritual aspect. Now, of course, in later Celtic literature, in medieval Irish and Welsh, well, in Irish literature particularly, there's the notion of the hero's portion, that one part of the pig belongs to the best warrior, and if somebody challenges, they fight over it. And it seems to archaeologists that one part of the pig in at the Iron Age in southeast Wales belonged to the gods potentially, and was the part of the pig that you didn't eat, didn't cook, and didn't put on your midden afterwards. So there's obviously a very strong complex of ritual and custom around how appropriately you eat pigs at feasts in the Iron Age and then carrying on into the early Roman period.
Thank you. Well, Hyn Wen trotted on upstream past what would one day be the Roman town of Caerwent, and she made her way up to the place of her choosing, where she gave birth to a single grain of wheat and a single bee. And the place where the wheat and the bee were birthed is known now as Maes y Gwenith, the wheat field. Yes, you can find it on the OS map, just to the east of Grey Hill, as it rises on the edge of the Forest of Wentwood. And by now the stream has changed its name again. It's known as the Cas Trogi Brook. Cas Trogi, the fort of the Trogi. And you can also find the fort, or the remains of it, if you're persistent. It's further on round to the north of Wentwood, not far from the source of the brook. And it was built in the 13th century and probably never really finished, and now covered and screened by trees and bushes and stems and nettles. So, having birthed the southeast of Gwent into abundance, with crops to grow and pollinators aplenty, Hyn Wen trotted on about her further business in the west and the north of Wales. But our business stays here. Now, regarding the Forest of Wentwood itself, there is much to be said. It's the ancient woodland, or the remnants of the ancient woodland, which once divided Gwent into two, Gwent Iscoed, Gwent below the wood, and Uwchcoed, above the wood. And it's seen people and ages rise and fall and come and go, and it's seen many creatures pass by, including Hyn Wen. There are some great views to be had out across the land from Wentwood, but I wanted to go up onto Grey Hill, which lies alongside the woodland. And on this day, it was lying in great beauty and peacefulness, full of the sound of bees in foxgloves. On the summit of Grey Hill is a site older than Stonehenge, Neolithic bank boundaries, a circle of 9 stones, and others standing within and without. We didn't do any recording up there because it seemed a shame to spoil the peace of the place. On this day, the stones felt like they were wistfully waiting, keeping watch. And below, in the distance, the wide, wide panorama of the Severn Sea, the bridge crossings, the coast of England beyond, the huge sky. Although the origins of the site are mysterious and disputed in some ways, and there are many things that we can't know, it's likely that this was not a highly defended or even a lived-in site, but a special ritual place, a place of burial of the dead, of celebrating with the living, of raising stones that stand in for the human tribes and the human beings who watched and who belonged to the land here. And we were just in time with our visit, because if you visit much later in the summer, the stones in the circle, which already are up to their knees in bracken, would be completely covered, and much of the site would sink quietly from view until the winter. It's a special place indeed. If you go there, I wonder how it will seem to you. The people long ago who raised up the stones could look out and watch the world turn. And now the stones do the watching for them, holding the memory of their land and their place within it. Now, looking out and down to the sea, I know that's where Rambler has already headed. On into midsummer with open arms. And that's where I'm headed too. Next time, to the south. To the sea, to the little regarded coast of Gwent. And that's where you'll be going too, if you come with me. So for now, I'll say thank you for keeping me company, and I'll see you again on down the track.